Welcome to the Viktor Frankl Meaning Academy. We are your hosts of the Meaning Academy podcast, Dr. Daniel Franz and Dr. Baruch Halevi. In this podcast, we explore the insights and inspiration of Dr. Viktor Frankl and all things meaning, purpose, and resilience. Thanks for joining us. And now let's begin our search for meaning. Welcome back to the Meaning Academy and our podcast. I'm here in our virtual studio with my good friend, Dr. Dan, and we are going to dive into what I refer to as the dark D's: depression, divorce, disease, death, the Denver Broncos. I don't know, like whatever it is that brings up in you darkness. Now, I don't want to scare any of our listeners off, but all day, every day, as I'm counseling people, Dr. Dan, and I'm sure you do too, everybody's got their own version of the dark D, that stuff that they just got to battle through, and they need a little Viktor Frankl, Meaning Academy. They need a little inspiration or light inside the darkness. How you doing, my friend?
I don't know, man. I feel like I need some Paxil or Prozac all of a sudden. Like, we had a pre-podcast meeting. I said, sounds great. I'm going to go grab some water and calm the dog down. I come back down, and now I'm depressed.
Not for long.
Not for long, because we got answers to that. But, man, you know, that really resonated with me. You're right. I love the fact that we record towards the end of the week. And so, I try to hold that day sacred just for, like, it takes so many hours for me to be ready to podcast with you. And then the debrief afterwards, man, 4 or 5 hours of just coming down from the high or the depression of chatting with you. I have to hold that day sacred, but it never works, right? Because there are so many people struggling in the world today. I believe I've quoted this many times before. I'm not sure if I quoted it on the podcast. A few weeks ago, I found this article from Indeed.com, one of the big hiring websites. And it ships out the top 20 jobs for 2024. Be almost half. I think at least a third of those jobs were in the mental health field.
Wow,
it's crazy. We're struggling.
So, you know, we did a podcast a few weeks ago on there's always hope. In times like these, there's always been times like these. And it's just an eternal message that we need to, and we need to turn to examples. You know, I know we share a love of logotherapy and Dr. Frankl for many reasons, not the least of which is, and I've said it before, I'll say it again, it wasn't born on Harvard campus, like positive psychology. It wasn't born in a lab like Freud, you know, testing out theories. It was born prior to, but it was really tested out in the darkness, the depths of the Holocaust. And if it's true there, it's true anywhere. And I trust a man who's been through hell and back and is bigger and stronger and more optimistic and hopeful on the other side of that. That's a philosophy and a worldview that you got to take seriously.
Man, you just like set up a softball for my psychology nerd trap, man. I love that. Thank you. I'm going to hit a home run with that, because you're right. It wasn't born, you know, Freud, as we know, if you're part of the Viktor Frankl Meaning Academy, your search for meaning, and you've dived into the learning library and my piece on the psychology, the history of the big three of Viennese psychology, Freud was born out of privilege. You know, he lived in Victorian era Vienna, wealth, the end of the Habsburg dynasty, one of the greatest standing dynasties of all time. At that time, Vienna was only second in size and wealth to Paris, France. It was one of the great cultures of the past several hundred years. From Freud, we have Adler. Adler he was a diminutive gentleman, and so he thought we all needed power because he got beat up by his big brothers a lot. But here comes Frankl at the end of World War I, this transition from the Habsburg. For those of you that know your world history, Austria was not on the winning side of World War I. So they went from one of the largest dynasties in history to 1/6 of their size. That cultural center, the center of learning that spawned so much science and psychology, was diminished. People were depressed. The economy was broken and people were jobless. So as Frankl's coming into his studies in psychiatry and neurology, this is the state of his world, right? Worse than, I would say, I don't know, history, we would have to go back and see, probably worse than the Great Depression in that area for Vienna, Austria, destroyed by World War I, split up by the powers of the world. 1/6 of its original size. So Frankl has to start trying to figure out how to help people that are going through all of this. And he does. His psychology of meaning, later to be known as logotherapy, takes the suicide rate in the clinics he works in and brings it almost down to zero. He starts forming counseling centers for youth. He helps them get back to work, which he found to be very meaningful. So of course, you know, because we share that great love of Frankl and his history, I have to agree with you. One of the greatest theories of the past 100 years, not just because it was a good theory, but because it was tested in the fires of post-World War I Vienna, and then later through 3 years of Hitler's concentration camps.
I don't think a lot of people realize, you know, Frankl was already making a name for himself, successful on many levels prior to the Holocaust in the areas that you just described. Of, there was a suicide epidemic, particularly amongst those in the gymnasium, the academic centers throughout Europe, the pressures, whatever. And then add to it all the nihilism of that time where, you know, a culture in decline and the hopelessness, the despair, doesn't sound worlds apart from some of the things we talked about in our last podcast. And here comes a man who has an answer to that darkness epidemic. Again, suicide is just another manifestation of darkness in our world, and has an answer. And then I think really why this man became, his psychology of meaning was already, you know, stood on its own, but then he goes through the Holocaust and he lives it firsthand, having, as I've shared many times, but, you know, his wife was murdered, his unborn child was murdered, his parents were murdered, his brother was murdered, his family was murdered, incarcerated, stripped of everything. And yet, right, dot, 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 and yet, here we are because not only of his philosophy, but of this example.
He came out with absolutely nothing and nobody to turn to. And in fact, in part of Man's Search for Meaning, he talks about even those that he befriended in the concentration camps. So many were so embittered upon liberation that he knew he couldn't associate with them. And so thank goodness he found solace in writing Man's Search for Meaning in those first days afterwards. But yeah, I mean, if he, not just going through the concentration camps and suffering through them, but the life after, I think you and I often forget to talk about that part. The life, you don't just get liberated and all of a sudden everything's great. I mean, just a metaphor for that, right? When the American soldiers came in and liberated the camps, they were so starved. The prisoners were so starved, but the soldiers knew they couldn't just give them all the food because they would eat themselves to death. And so imagine that on a psychological and emotional and a spiritual front, you have nobody and you can't go indulge enough to satisfy yourself.
And not only to, again, survive, like you're saying, but to go back out into the world to love again, to live again, to start a new family, not in replacement of his old family, but in some ways to honor, right, all that had been lost and taken. And so, you know, this resolve to say yes to life in spite of everything, the name of one of his books. And I just think it's such a timeless and relevant conversation. When I'm sitting with people in these chairs behind me and we're talking about their dark deeds, and each one has their own, you know, version of an inner concentration camp, as we've shared, to be able to look at them in the eye and to share my experience having gone through my dark deeds, but also this man's experience, and give them the tools, the philosophy of a tradition grounded in that truth, that reality, that everything can be taken from a man, but one thing, the last of human freedoms, to choose one's attitude in any given circumstances, to choose your own way. Wow, like revelation. This is possible, this is real, and you'll find light if you go seek it.
So I'm going to preface this statement with a question I want you to consider as I ramble, right? why is this important today? Why are you and I bringing this up again? And I'll offer a segue to that. As much the intensity that you and I share our love of Frankel is only equaled by the intensity of which we disagree on fashion and cardigans. I mean, if people can compare and hear the passion we have for our work together for Frankel and understand the dislike of cardigans B has, and I intentionally wore this one today because next week, I really intentionally wear it just to push your buttons at 8 o'clock in the morning, my friend. But let's see if I can make this segue happen. This is not only just a cardigan, but this is actually, B, do you know where this cardigan comes from? I've told you the story before, right?
Pretty sure it comes from Mr. Rogers' wardrobe.
Even better, B. This is from the Big Lebowski, the dude himself, which, you know, a close derivative of Mr. Rogers. And I wear this today because next week is actually, we celebrate the Day of the Dude, the anniversary of the release of the Big Lebowski some 25 or 30 years ago. And B, I am actually, not only do I wear the cardigan, but I am a ordained dudist priest. That's right, B. I have two certificates from the Church of the Dude saying that I studied, what is it called, abidance counseling and some other fake degree. And I bring this up for this point. There's actually a movement of people, of human beings, that subscribe to something they call the Church of the Dude from this movie from the 1990s. There's some great philosophy in the movie. I love it for some laughs and to enjoy a white Russian along with the movie. But what that also tells me is if there are thousands of people subscribing to the philosophy of this movie, man, there are people out there that really need some real connection and maybe a real philosophy to subscribe to.
I was a philosophy major in college, and I remember...
of course you were.
I know, it's ridiculous. this is my dad said, actually. I remember one of the... I or somebody else in the class said something about, I don't need God, I don't need a higher power, whatever. And he said something to the effect of, oh, make no mistake about it, you'll answer to a God. The question is, which one? Right? Like, we're all going to turn ourselves over to something. Maybe it's a person, maybe it's a theology, maybe it's a movement, like you see a lot of sort of inclination towards socialism in this day and age. And, you know, one of the darkest periods of our human history was the previous century under socialism and communism, where millions of people were just, you know, reduced to nothing but you know, numbers. And the bottom line is you got to be very conscious of what you choose to serve, because we're all going to choose something. And maybe it's the Big Lebowski. Maybe it's the Church of Cannabis here in Colorado. There's literally a Church of Cannabis. And I drive past it thinking, I mean, I'm not Christian, but that's such an affront, I think, to the church next door that's building itself on something so much more profound than a plant. I've talked about it before. The plant isn't immoral. It just is amoral. It's a plant.
Be so much goodness in that statement, right? The idea that if you do, you know, it kind of reminds me of you. If you don't believe, if you don't stand for anything, you will stand for everything. Or if you don't stand for something, you will fall for everything. And this idea that, well, going back to your point, like to build a church around a plant next to a church based on several thousand years of ancient wisdom, right? It does seem like an affront, but I feel like we live in a time where so many people behave in a way just to bring about an affront to other people, just to almost intend to push other people's buttons, much like the reason I wore this sweater with you. But even more profoundly, like we live in this contrarian time where in order for me to believe what I believe, I have to push against you or cause you pain. And Dr. Frankel, in many of his books, said, you know, we are all moving towards this individual spirituality, this individual relationship with meaning. But why do we feel like we have to push against other people in order to do that?
I think you named it, which is this hyper individuality. That's that to me is the litmus test. I know it's not the problem, is it's not the church of cannabis so much as it's to what end, right? Like to what service? How do I transcend myself in the service of something or someone bigger than myself, which is Frankl 101. And you look at the church next door, or you look at the girls and boys club down the street, or you look at something where you're participating in something greater than just high. Or I go to yoga every day, and it's a means, not an end. So some people, though, in there, it's an end. It's a church unto itself, where like you do yoga for yoga's sake. No, you do yoga so you can be in a better place of mind to go fulfill your responsibilities and serve in other capacities, right? So it's got to be towards a bigger end.
You know, I know as we were talking about this in pre-production, those 30 seconds we used to plan, you know, you make a really good point. And I associate that with a theme I've written about for a long time and talked about, this idea that we live in a time of too many gurus. All you need is a platform and an idea, and you can certify yourself as a priest in the Church of Dudism, or a Dudist priest, or a coach. I'm a whatever kind of coach you want to be these days. They're everywhere, and it used to find a guru. It used to mean you had to talk to somebody that actually climbed the mountain to get up there, as you said, right? Somebody with some experience, some wisdom, some understanding. But anybody today. It's interesting when I see some of these, what do they call it, therapist coaches out there. As a psychotherapist, I'm inundated with therapist coaches. And I'm like, hey, you still have all of your hair and not a single wrinkle. What experience do you, that's really a poor judge based on what I'm looking at right now. But, people without any experience coming, I'm saying, well, I can coach you how to do this. It's like, wow, I don't get it. How do we identify, going back to you, how can we truly identify those ideas, philosophies, and standards to follow and try to bring back some semblance of order and goodness and meaning in our lives and community?
I think that's really key, is does the person have the wrinkles and the scars and the limp, having gone through the arena of life, having had his or her ass handed to them time and time again, and getting up and dusting themselves off and moving forward. And here they are. I trust that woman. Mm-hmm. I put my faith and stock in that person, because for multiple reasons, not the least of which is they're walking the talk. Mm-hmm. And I come from a world where you don't walk the talk. You just talk the talk, being a clergy, mm-hmm. right? So many clergy stay. I was one of them. I'm not accusing anybody of anything I didn't go through. I stood up there with a lifetime contract and a cushy job and said just enough to challenge them, but not so much as to jeopardize that lifetime contract. Mm-hmm. Right. And I was a made man, and I stopped trusting myself because I had to walk away and I had to go out into the world and eat what I kill. Not to have this guaranteed paycheck and go figure out what the hell do I stand for and what's my edge and, why am I here? And I had to do that out in the wilderness. And I lost myself for a good 5 years, literally in the wilderness of the north of Israel on a mountaintop, and didn't speak the language really, and didn't know the culture, and didn't know my profession, and brought me to my knees. And that's when I became a faithful man. Right. It wasn't until I was out in my personal concentration camp that I think became worthy of listening to. And I say that with all humility. But prior to that, I was just another guru peddling another product. Sorry, that was me. That was a little bit of a overshare.
No, man, that's deep and profound, and I agree. But I don't want to sit here and tout us as gurus just because we're grumpy old bald men with experience and wrinkles. But we are, right? And I think that's what we bring to the Viktor Frankl Meaning Academy. But also, we have so many other ones out there that I would encourage people to look at critically and to pay attention to. And
I want to challenge that though before we go on, because I wouldn't say you can speak for yourself. I'm not a guru. I subscribe now to the Buddhist idea of if you meet the Buddha on the road, kill him. right? Like that, don't accept anybody as your guru. Or Tony Robbins says, I'm not your guru. Mm-hmm. I am my own guru for the first time in my life, mm-hmm. right? I trust me. I go to the mirror. I like the guy looking back at me. I will never tell somebody just sitting in that chair behind me, be me, see me, listen to me. All I'll do now is say, I've been through hell and back. You can too. Here's what worked for me. Let's figure out what works for you. To me, that is not guru. That is companion.
Yeah, that is. I mean, I think that is the heart and nature of logotherapy and good psychotherapy is, no, I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to join you, to bear witness, to walk with you through that. Maybe I just have some other ideas and experience and, you know, some training that can help you. But yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I think too often, and maybe that's what I'm experiencing in my work, is so many people are looking for, yep, there it is, somebody to follow. Show me the next Instagram famous person. Let me hit that click to pay attention to this person so they can tell me what to do. And as much as you seek somebody to tell you what to do, you'll find them. Plenty of people out there will do that, and they will charge you $5 or $5,000. But in the end, they're just telling you what to do, and it may not be your solution. And so that is the heart of good logotherapy, good friendship, good accountability is, hey, I'm here with you, but I can't tell you what. You've got to discover your own meaning.
And to me, that's the litmus test of if you're following somebody worthy of following to emulate their example, not to do their program, to do their steps, to, you know, do what they tell you. Because when I run a Man Uprising men's groups, and one of our principles is you do not tell other men what to do. You simply experience share. Share your experience. That's the extent to which you can help another human being, like Viktor Frankl. I read about and I learn about his experience, not because I'm going to have his experience, because I want to know it's possible or what's possible. And that's an experience share. That's all we can do.
So what are the takeaways? I feel we can walk away. You know, we've kind of meandered around a lot of philosophy. And as a philosophy major, you understand the reason why I left philosophy as a major. I was a double major, psychology and philosophy. And as soon as the philosophy department, sorry, I forgot the word there. As soon as they started up printing t-shirts that said philosophy, think deep thoughts about being unemployed, I said, ooh, I can't keep paying, I can't keep asking for loans to go in this major. So I had to drop out of there to find a real job. Little did I know psychology still wasn't a real job. I had to go back to school for more. What can people take away from this as we dance through the idea of gurus and shallow spirituality and what we believe to be a greater height and depth psychology or philosophy of logotherapy? What do we want people to take away today? What can they go do after listening to this? Besides, again, go watch The Big Lebowski and find some Zen experience there.
You know, in the old days, people would go to church or synagogue. And most people I know don't go to church or synagogue anymore. If they do, it's perfunctory. It's high holidays. It's Christmas. It's, you know, it's cultural as much as it's not necessarily a daily roadmap for how to navigate life's darkness. If it is, great. But most people I know, it's not. So find that roadmap, right? We all need a roadmap. Like back to that philosophy professor, you're gonna worship something or somebody. So be very conscientious about what that is. And I think it's important to find yourself a church, a synagogue, a community of your that speaks to you. And it doesn't have to be, you know, the synagogues or churches of old. If it does, again, great. But I consider our Meaning Academy a congregation, a place to congregate, to come together, not built around the tenets of Christianity or Judaism, built around the tenets of meaning and purpose and resilience, and an opportunity to come find your path on your terms, but in the support and the nurturance of a meaning community.
Absolutely. I definitely saw that leading that way. Come join us there. Fine. I think one of the things I've been telling a lot of people, not in my clinical office, just podcasts and in speaking engagements, is, you know, we go back to the hero's journey, such a well-known and well-experienced story, right? Every hero has their flaw. They go through the flaw. They find their mentor. Every hero needs a mentor. When you feel like you are struggling, you got to find that mentor. But it should be, as we said, just there's this core difference between somebody telling you what to do and somebody joining you on the path. And I think that's certainly what we do in Your Search for Meaning and the different aspects of the Meaning Academy. And I don't know. I don't think there's anything else much like it out there.
I would add another thing is find yourself a dead teacher, right? Because I believe in the dead teachers. I get this all the time. Like, you never met Viktor Frankl. It's true. And yet he's my spiritual father. I just can't explain it. But I've met him in his books. I've met him in his example. I've met him in his thoughts of his students. And I've met him in my own heart. And I don't need to have met the flesh and blood. I know tons of people in flesh and blood who are not my teachers. And most of my teachers are dead people from the past. And their wisdom lives on and still speaks to me. So I would say find yourself a good dead teacher.
Did you just make that up on the fly, or did somebody give that to you?
I think I made it up on the fly, although nothing's original.
That's beautiful, man. Find a dead teacher. And then maybe bring it to some live teachers like B and Elise and I, but that is great. And you know, you really, that makes a lot of sense. You know, I'm reading a lot of different dead teachers, whether it's 100 years ago or 1,000 years ago. And it's amazing how wisdom, true wisdom, stacks up and can be familiar. I wouldn't say repetitive, but certainly familiar. And that reminds me, I have to issue a redaction about a dead teacher I believe I talked about in the last podcast. One of our fellow meaning seekers in the Your Search for Meaning, I had commented, I can't believe he actually studied with Joseph Campbell. And I really should have done the math and fact check, because Joseph Campbell has been gone for a long time. So that gentleman actually emailed me. He said, hey, he was more of my spiritual teacher than he was my real teacher. And I'm like, I am so glad you called me out on that, because I was literally scratching my head and just too lazy to go do the fact checking about Joseph, you know, his passing and his time in life. So more of a spiritual, a dead teacher, if you will, that I need to get back into, along with my Jungian studies and other things as well. There's a great dead teacher. If you're not going to, well, first study Frankl. So easy to read. Your Search for Meaning. Again, well, one of the top 10 passed on books in the past 100 years.
Everything I say is true, and some of it actually happened. That's a clergy saying. So you know what? It's true nonetheless, even if it didn't happen that way. But it sounded good. And thanks for the redaction. You're better than the legacy media, who never retract anything.
It's amazing. I couldn't live with myself knowing I told such a fallacy on our world-renowned podcast.
So I was listening to, I won't say her name, but she's a pretty well-known New Agey teacher who's quoted in like every yoga studio around America.
Brene Brown.
And it's not Brene, actually. It's somebody else. But anyways, the bottom line is she was quoting somebody, but she wasn't quoting them. She was pretending like it's hers. And in Judaism, there's this tradition. It's called B'Shem Omro. You say something in the name of somebody else. So I'll always try to attribute the author, the idea, the source of the idea, not because, for one reason, because I want to be a part of something bigger than myself. I want to pay honor right upon those whose shoulders I stand, because they're giants. And then again, that's a way to be a part of this dead teacher tradition and continue that legacy and be a part of something. And I'll have one more thing. Because you asked the question of, right, so like, what do we do? How do we find these connections to what we're talking about? I would say another one is become a spiritual mutt, right? You can be religiously loyal to whatever tradition you come from, but be a spiritual mutt. Draw best practice from wherever it comes from, right? Take Toltec shamanism and talking to the dead, or yoga and movement of body, or Buddhist and mindfulness meditation, or Judaism, Kabbalah and the blueprint of divinity, or Christianity. And I turn to Christianity for my understanding of real faith and prayer. To me, being a spiritual mutt is a pathway to what we're talking about.
Okay. So let me take this a little bit of a different direction, because I've been working with and interacting with quite a few atheists recently. People, because of the times or because of their beliefs, are like, man, I just don't. It's hard to even say, because atheism has its different degrees. But those that say, you know, there is nothing above, there is nothing higher, or maybe I just don't believe in a deity. What would you say to them about being a spiritual mutt?
To me, this is the point, is that, you know, when I talk about being a spiritual mutt, I ask myself the following questions. Is it good and does it work? I don't give a shit if it's true. I don't give a shit if it's factually based or all the stuff around it. Is it good and does it work? Mm-hmm. And if, for instance, meditation, call it whatever you want. Is it good? Yeah, it does no harm. And does it work? And yes, it's been proven to work. So you don't have to believe anything. Believe whatever the hell you want. Sit in mindfulness meditation, quiet for 20 minutes a day, and studies have shown you will get through your darkness with that much more hope and possibility.
Yeah, I think the other point with that is it good and does it work? You can actually look at both the, you know, your Bible and my Bible, the Jewish Bible, the Old Testament, the Christian Bible, the Old Testament, and the New Testament, and say, is it good and does it work? Absolutely. It's been proven time again. Research tells us a sense of spirituality, not just spirituality, but religion, a way to express that spirituality, those people are markedly healthier. Now, we need to look at the research and dive into what markedly and healthier looks like. But the fact is, you can, as long as you are not taking these stories as literal factual happenings, that, you know, Noah built a 1,000-foot-long ark and sailed the seas and all the, you know, I think our good friend Dr. Peterson does an amazing job, Jonathan Pageau, a lot of other people, of going, you can find some amazing wisdom in studying one book, right? Or the stories of that book. And if you look at the derivatives of that book, right? These books have lasted thousands of years for a reason. There's good wisdom in there. So I think going back to the idea of being a spiritual mutt, I know my mutt, my boy that we just had to lay to rest a few months ago, he didn't give a damn what you fed him. He was going to eat it. And sometimes that worked for him, sometimes he didn't, but he always had a great test of, does this work? And if it didn't work for him, it usually wound up back on the floor a couple hours later. But if it did work for him, he was hunting for it again, right? So finding out what works for you, but being open to looking into all of it.
You know, look, I'm an ordained rabbi, although I don't really, you know, identify that much with it anymore, organized religion. I've always looked at Jesus. You say your book, my book. I always looked at the New Testament as, the, is it good and does it work? And there's so much that's good and there's so much that works. Does it all work? No, not for me. Does the Old Testament work? No, not for me. So it's like, you got to be willing to spot sparks of light wherever they come from and say, I'm a spark seeker. That's what I care about. Is it good? Does it work? Will this illuminate my life and help me live better? And I guess, you know, what we're talking about, and I would say to your atheist friend, is, again, I don't care what somebody believes. All I care is what you do. And if it's good and it works, just do that, right? Mm-hmm. Period. Just do that.
Yeah, just kind of thinking about some of those ideas. Is it good and does it work? I still have an issue with all that begatting in the Old Testament. I can't get through that chapter. It's really hard. But I did have somebody much wiser than me one day, you know, explain it to me in little chunks, because sometimes that's all that I can handle. But, you know, to go from there to all these other sources. So that maybe is the message of the day, is, you know, when you're done with this episode of the Defiant Spirit or the Meaning Project podcast, or of course what we come together to call the Viktor Frankl Meaning Academy podcast, go explore. You know, you can look at B's website, my website, Elise's website, the Viktor Frankl Meaning Academy website. We have so many resources there to share, books and podcasts and other things. Explore, make it a part of your life. If you are in, I can't keep calling them whatever your D's are. I mean, as Dr. D, I cannot be associated with all of these negative things, but they are, right? Maybe sometimes I'm a little negative, but you know, if you're feeling yourself in that, there's wisdom and help and mentorship out there. But I think our message today is, don't go looking for gurus to tell you what to do. Seek mentorship, right? And of course, we are completely biased to the mentorship of the Viktor Frankl Meaning Academy and your search for meaning. We just held, we talked about it last week. We've held our two sessions for the month of February. Now we're in March. Dr. Elise is heading one up here I couldn't believe it, next week already, or about the time this podcast comes out, come join us. Dip your toe in some good philosophy and psychology and see what you think.
So find yourself a good dead mentor, teacher, become a spiritual mutt, right? So all these kind of, you know, just get out there and find something that's good and that works and just do that and become your own guru. And that's all I got to say about that.
Man, that was, so I was listening to one of my, I know how much you love Akira the Don. There's one mentor to go look out, because he takes all the quotes from some of our favorite podcasters and sets them to music. I was listening to one yesterday from the poet warrior Joe Rogan, and he just kept saying, do that thing, do difficult things, go explore, get out there and do that. And so B, the way you said that just reminded me of that. Get out there and go do something to expand, to grow, to learn. For those of you that were listening while you were running, good job. You've already done that today. You've got your exercise in. Now do some spiritual exercise, some mental, emotional exercise. Go read something good for yourself.
And I can't wait to join.
What's that?
I can't wait till you set that that clip of mine that I just said to like an MC Hammer, you know, musical backdrop. So
if we do that, you do have to put those pants on, B, and so that will be spectacular.
All right, my friend. Always an adventure with you.
Absolutely. You too, my friend. Hey, as always, get out there. Go live your life with meaning, purpose, and resilience.
Take care,
everybody.
You've been listening to the Meaning Academy podcast with your hosts, Dr. Daniel Franz and Dr. Baruch Halevi. If you found meaning in what you've heard, please leave us a 5-star review and be sure to share this with fellow meaning seekers. And don't forget to check us out at themeaningacademy.com, where you can learn how to join our weekly virtual and complimentary meaning masterminds. Until the next time, get out there and live your purpose and discover your meaning.